It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the past decade, the delivery of news online has developed, and in many ways, it's gotten very sophisticated. There has also been an evolution in the comments sections of news sites, but not necessarily a positive one. In recent days, both NPR and the Quad City Times shut down their comment sections. They are following the lead of a number of other news organizations. And this hour, we'll talk about why these decisions were made. We'll also explore how we interact with each other online and what we know about how to have a conversation online. Rachel Rubel, lecturer in the Communication Studies program at Iowa State University, will be here along with Reka Basu, a columnist at the Des Moines Register. And we do want to hear your comments this hour. You can join us at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Autumn Phillips, editor of the Quad City Times. Hello, Autumn.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.
And I'd like for you to first tell us what some of the things were that you were seeing. I know that disabling the comments section is something that you've been considering pretty much since you came to the Quad City Times. Give me some concrete examples of some of the things that you were seeing that made you think this was a necessary step.
Yeah, so I joined the Quad City Times on December 1st last year. I've been the editor of newspapers around the country, and this has been an ongoing issue at just about every paper, and I've experimented with a lot of different things, bringing up, taking away their anonymity, asking everyone to log in under their name, moving Facebook comments, and here it was anonymous commenting directly onto our website. They had to log in. I knew who they were. But the forward-facing public did not. I was noticing, frankly, a lot of racism on our site. I was noticing bullying on our site. I was noticing a lot of accusations of criminal activity, conspiracy theories, things that, frankly, we didn't have the manpower to monitor.
Well, and that's an interesting point. So you mentioned the comments could be anonymous when they were posted, although you did have an email address for these individuals
right.
at the newspaper. But was there any kind of a process for curating these comments or taking down comments that were particularly hateful?
We gave the readers, the commenters themselves, the power to monitor each other. So you could flag a comment, two flags, two complaints, and it was automatically removed from the site. And so there was a little bit of that, monitoring of each other, but mostly, they let each other say whatever they wanted. Some people would call the other person out. But mostly I have three people on staff who it's not their sole job to monitor comments, but they would keep an eye on comments. People would email us, call us, why aren't you taking this down? We would ban people if they were particularly egregious, and then they would lobby us to come back on, or they would invent a new identity and reappear.
Right, because you had email addresses, but that didn't mean that you could actually verify the identity of someone.
We did not spend time verifying each commenter.
There are news organizations that have taken that approach to curating their comments, but that's an incredible investment mm-hmm. of time, and it's 24 hours a day. So an organization like the Quad City Times didn't really have the resources to dedicate to something like that.
Yeah, it's a choice with any business or any organization how you're going to use the manpower you have. And in the end, three people monitoring comments isn't the best use of our time. I think that, the true engagement comes from creating content, from doing journalism.
Can you give me, I know you did in the column that you wrote to announce this change to mm-hmm. your readers, can you give me a concrete example, an idea of a story that went up online that, of course, readers would turn to because they want information about what's going on, and then the comment section just devolved?
Okay, so the day I shut the comments off, or we shut the comments off, I wanted to do a gut check. This was a big change for us. It was a big policy shift. I'd been thinking about it for months. I'd been doubting myself for months. And I decided, okay, one more time, go online, see what's on there, make sure that you feel like you're making the right choice. So I went to our website. It was a Friday, and we had our most popular story was, or most read story, was a story about a man who was in a park downtown playing Pokemon Go, and he was stabbed and beaten, and he died that night. So, you know, this is a father. This is a member of the community. This is somebody. People witnessed this happen to him. It was right downtown, right on the riverfront. People were freaked out for a lot of reasons. So I went on to that story. There were a ton of comments, and they were, I'm not going to, you know, be specific about what they said, but they were racist, and they were not necessarily, you know, about this person or this crime. They were talking about Hillary Clinton. They were having their political arguments on our article. And so the idea of creating a forum for the community where people can connect, this is a public safety moment. Can they be watching out for each other? Can they be sharing information? No, they're just there being mean.
Is there anything about the comments section that you feel like is a real loss when you shut it down?
Yeah, so one of the things that held me back is that our comment section for a small group of people is a social space. You know, it's a place they get online in the morning and they interact with each other and they have genuine friendships and conversations. I look on an article and for every 9 racist, bullying, cruel comments, there's a great point. Somebody says, wait, why didn't you think about this? You didn't interview this person. You didn't take this approach. You're right, and it informs our journalism. So, I didn't want to lose that true community that we had created. I didn't want to lose that interaction with our readers. So since we shut off those comments, we didn't just shut them off and walk away. We have been talking a lot about how we can be engaging people in other ways. For example, we now put every single letter to the editor on our Facebook page to make sure that people have a space to interact with any of our opinion content.
And would that be any letter to the editor, regardless of whether it would make it into the paper or not, or just the ones that make it into the paper? Because I'm sure you receive more than get published.
Any published letter to the editor. So we publish just about any letter to the editor we get, unless it is racist or attacking someone's religion or a business.
I want to talk more about other ways to engage with the public. That's going to be something we explore throughout the hour. So we'll save that for a little while. But have there been any surprising responses to you to this? I'm sure you expected to get some pushback, some people who are complaining. Any surprises?
A couple. One, I've been surprised by how many parents I've heard from thanking us for making this decision because teens were being bullied on our site. So we would put up, a sports story, and people would jump on and make comments about people in the story, their bodies or faces or just bullying. I guess I knew some of that was happening, but I didn't know the extent, and I didn't know the environment we were creating unknowingly. The second thing that surprised me was how many of my staff members came in and thanked me for the decision, and how I saw an almost immediate boost in the morale in the newsroom. You know, as journalists, we just accept that part of our job is to get beat up. And part of that is, part of that is part of the job. You know, we are out there every day. We're you know, pointing out wrongdoings, and, you know, journalism is a two-way street. But if you every day you publish an article online and you know immediately people are going to jump on and they're going to say things about you, about your name, you know, your abilities or name calling.
Let's be clear. It's not just about your work. It's not always a response to the
personal.
Article, but
yeah,
it does get personal.
And day after day, that can get difficult to deal with. And I didn't realize how that was, how it was hurting morale.
Now, before we get to the break, let's just enumerate some of the other ways that readers can interact with you still, because you mentioned posting all of your editorial letters on Facebook. Of course, you have the Facebook comment section as well. So you're still interacting with your readers in social media.
We are. And then Twitter, when newspapers or media organizations launched comments in the 90s on stories, Facebook, came into being in 2004. I don't know the year that Twitter came onto the scene, but since then, so the landscape has changed. Now we have Twitter. Every single person in our newsroom is on Twitter, that's a place where we have a lot of engagement with readers.
All right. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Autumn Phillips is with me. She's the editor of the Quad City Times. The Quad City Times recently made their decision to do away with the comments section that allowed anonymous commenters on their website. We'll talk more about engaging with people online, how we can have productive conversations online. Coming up in just a minute, Rachel Rubel will be here, lecturer in the Communication Studies Department at Iowa State University, and later on, Rekha Basu, columnist for the Des Moines Register. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the comments section on news sites and how we engage with each other online. The Quad City Times and NPR both recently did away with their comment sections on their sites, although they're still interacting with readers and listeners on Facebook, Twitter, and in other social media forums. I've been talking with Autumn Phillips. She's the editor of the Quad City Times. She's the person who made the decision to pull the comments section on the Quad City Times. And now joining us is Rachel Rubel. She's a lecturer in the Communication Studies program at Iowa State University. And Rachel, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to dig into how different kinds of forums shape how people interact. And Autumn was talking about how on the Quad City Times, you did enter an email address, but you didn't have to have your name verified. These were essentially anonymous comments. So in the research that you've done, when people are allowed to comment anonymously, what does that seem to do to the conversation, to discourse?
Well, with communication, we are always guided by norms and rules. And so one of the things that happens when we're communicating as ourselves, we recognize that there are consequences for our communication. So if we're communicating in an online space with our actual names, especially in our local communities, there are consequences to communicating with incivility, right, with racist or bullying types of communication. So allowing for anonymity or providing that space for anonymity, individuals don't have those same sort of perceived or potential repercussions that they would when connected with their actual name. So that can play a big role in allowing people to feel they have a space where they are free to share problematic types of communication.
And Autumn was sharing some of the kinds of things that she saw in the comment section that made her make this decision. I also want to share some of the reasoning that NPR.org gave for the decision that they made to shut down their comment section, because they made the argument not just on the basis of some of the really difficult, problematic comments that were being made, but also with math. And I'll just read this. The NPR.org audience has grown dramatically in recent years to between 25 and 35 million unique visitors each month, but far less than 1% of that audience is commenting, and the number of regular comment participants is even smaller. Only 2,600 people have posted at least one comment in each of the last 3 months, 0.003% of the 79.8 million NPR.org users who visited the site during that period. We believe strongly in the value of audience conversations about the news and our work, and we also believe in adapting tools and technologies as they evolve. So they're saying, okay, not only do we have this problematic speech, hateful speech, attacks, the space being used for political comments or comments that aren't related to the content that they're commenting on, but also this is a very, very small group of people who are taking advantage of this space as well. I mean, that's a very striking percentage. Rachel, when you read that, what was your thought on that?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Online users have so many options and so many opportunities for communicating online that typically we tend to go to the things that we're already using. So rather than setting up a new account on a news organization's website, if they do have something to say about a news story or something that's happening, they're more likely to do it through Twitter or through Facebook, right? These spaces where they're already at and they're already familiar with the way of using it. So for me, it makes perfect sense that rather than setting up a whole new account and learning that system, that if conversations are going to happen, they're likely to happen in the places where we're already communicating.
Now, all right, on Facebook, most people on Facebook actually use their real identities for their accounts, although there are people who do not use their real identities on Facebook. But I've looked at a lot of comment sections in my time on Facebook, and a lot of them still have these same problems where people say hateful things, provocative things, things that aren't related to the content. How does having your name associated with your comment change behavior?
I think it changes it to an extent, but it doesn't remove the problem altogether. One of the things that also happens when we're communicating online is it's very easy for us to forget the person on the other side of the message. So we might say something online, not thinking about the emotional impact or the impact it might have on others, because we don't see that emotional impact, right? We don't have those nonverbal cues, and we don't have that immediate feedback that might cause us pause. We also, oftentimes with really hot button issues or issues that do have a lot of polarization with them, both online and offline, we sometimes, instead of thinking of ourselves as communicating about that message as an individual, we want to become a representative for, we want to stand up for our side, right, for our perspective, for the others who believe the same things that we do. And so that oftentimes will give us a little bit more push or a little bit more oomph behind thinking, okay, I really need to say this because I need to get my point out there. I need to make sure that my perspective and the perspective of the people who agree with me is being presented. And so I think that might be part of what's happening in those spaces as well.
Well, and Autumn, do you see that? Obviously, again, you are still engaging with your readers on Facebook, on Twitter, in email, in many other ways where people have really unprecedented contact with your reporters and with the editorial staff at the newspaper. This is the age that we live in. With the social media sites, do you still see that kind of those personal attacks and the kind of unrelated provocative speech?
I see some of the unrelated people who it's pretty obvious that they read the headline and didn't read the article, just jumping into the conversation. But I would say if we're going to compare the two, most of the conversations are on topic, even if they're a little heated or a little mean. The bullying, the, you know, people aren't as likely to air their prejudices on Facebook when their name is attached and, you know, your mom is your Facebook friend, right? You're going to be, you know, your social network is going to be monitoring you as well as
Because if you make a comment on something, even if it's in a public forum on Facebook, your comment might show up in the feed of other people that whose opinions
your
you
boss.
Value.
Yeah.
And I would love to know, Rachel, from your research and the research of others, is there an online forum that seems to foster productive conversation? Because the idea of people interacting with people with other ideas and sharing their ideas and, you know, explaining themselves, that's a kind of an exciting prospect.
Yeah.
Does it work anywhere?
It does. It does. But it's tricky to find. So what we find with online communication and online community is that there are certainly very supportive spaces and spaces where individuals do engage in debate and they engage in productive discussion of ideas. Now, I wouldn't say that 100% of the conversation is going to look like that, but you'll find that there's a much higher proportion of the type of communication that's happening. And it can be in a variety of spaces. It can be in specific Facebook groups. It could be on Reddit, which can be known for being also very negative in tone, but there are spaces on discussion platforms such as Reddit that can be highly productive and very positive in tone. So for individuals who are engaging in online communication, it's a matter of being open to looking for a variety of sources of information and recognizing that although there might be negative comments in some spaces, that's not what all of the communication online looks like. So looking for those spaces where you find people engaging in productive conversation. Once you find those spaces, what typically happens is that's the norm for that space. So that's the type of communication that's typically there. So you can keep coming back to that space, and it's likely that you're going to keep finding that kind of productive conversation rather than unproductive conversation.
This hour, we're talking about online engagement. We've been talking about the fact that a number of news organizations, including recently the Quad City Times and NPR, have both done away with their comment sections on their websites. With me right now, Autumn Phillips, editor of the Quad City Times, Rachel Rubel, lecturer in the Communication Studies program at Iowa State University. We also want to hear your comments this hour, and we've already gotten a couple of comments from individuals. This one's from Jacques on Facebook. I think that closing comments down shuts down all discussion and is in the end worse than an unproductive conversation. I also think it smacks of weakness. A strong argument has no need of insulation from criticism, for it should be able to withstand any assault. And Autumn, I'd love to hear your response to that, because again, you didn't shut down comments because of criticism of the content in the newspaper, right?
Right. So I just looked on our Facebook page to see what kind of communication we're having with readers, and I won't tell you which article, but an article we posted this morning. Most of our articles, I noticed people are sharing and liking or reacting now that you can on Facebook. The comments, so glad I took time to visit with him so I could be misquoted. You know, so there's still there's still room for people questioning and interacting and being negative. It wasn't about protecting us from that. It was about, frankly, it was about the resources and the time that we had as a news organization to monitor those comments, to be deleting things that were racist, to be banning people that were taking advantage of the space. When we shut down comments, I heard from quite a few people, but I heard from one woman who said, you know, it's not fair for you to blame the commenters. It's your fault for not monitoring enough, babysitting,
curating
comments. Yeah. And she's right, but the truth is, I need our staff. I prefer our staff to be out there doing journalism and creating content.
I want to read a couple more comments.
Sure.
This one's from Mary. Unfortunately, the comment sections have moved away from reasonable discussion and have turned into verbal assaults on those who post contrary to another's opinion. Comments have also turned political, even if the original story was not political. All the efforts to curb bullying have been negated by the behavior and example of adults. Joe on Facebook disagrees. He says, often the real truth comes out in the comments. You can find missing information and alternative viewpoints that were left out of the original article. And we do want to hear your comments throughout the hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join the conversation. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. Or post on our Facebook page. And I also want to welcome Rekha Basu into the conversation. She's a columnist at the Des Moines Register and has a lot of experience with comment sections of different varieties. Hello, Rekha.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Charity.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And Rekha, you have been through some changes in comments. I know that the Des Moines Register used to have the same kind of system that the Quad City Times was just talking about, with the possibility for anonymous commenters on stories on the website, and change to a system that uses people's Facebook profiles, Facebook uh-huh. identities. But uh-huh. with your experiences with comments in the past, your concerns were not so much about the attacks on you, although that's uh-huh. something you have a lot of experience with, but the attacks uh-huh. on the people that you write about. Can you give me an idea of the kinds of things you've experienced?
Right. So a couple of years ago, I forget how many years ago, maybe 4 or 5, it started to become obvious that people who I was interviewing or who I was writing about in my column were becoming the targets of really, really hateful posts and comments. And for example, a mother who lost her baby was being blamed for having, you know, somehow allowed that to happen. Or someone who was in a public position who was gay and not out was outed in the online comments. And that sort of thing just made it very difficult for me to sort of gain the confidence of people I was trying to talk to and quote in my columns, because they were put in such a precarious and dangerous and difficult position in their own lives. And so I approached the editors at the time and said, look, you know, this is just not working. And at least, and I had read that the New York Times had had some really good experience with switching to requiring people to use their names. And so I wasn't calling for us to stop accepting comments at all. I just wanted them to stop being anonymous. And I asked the editors if we could think about requiring people to use their names. They tried to set up various systems and decided the best way to do it was to go through Facebook, to have people registered through Facebook so that they did have a name and an identification. And I know that it's possible for some people to put fake names on Facebook. But for the most part, what we found, and they only did this with my column, because somehow my column, and I could speculate on the reasons, and I'm sure all our listeners could too, was a real lightning rod for that kind of vitriolic response. And so they just switched it over to requiring names for my column. And indeed, we immediately noticed a change in tenor. I mean, it wasn't that people were still angry or having vehement disagreements, but I think the impact of requiring people to identify themselves and be visible to their neighbors, their family members, their bosses, their kids, suddenly changed up the whole dynamic. So we noticed that people were much more respectful. Now, that's not to say that the problem has been completely solved, either for my columns or for the paper in general, but it has certainly improved things a lot.
Now, of course, the people you write about in your columns, mm-hmm. they are identified by their real mm-hmm. name, so their identity is on the line. Your identity is on the line. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like that leveled the playing field if people had to be accountable in what they were saying?
It does, and also, quite frankly, it's very easy to hide one's racism, one's misogyny, one's homophobia, one's fear of foreigners behind the anonymous banner, whereas when you have to be identified as being affiliated with those positions, I mean, it's true, there are still some people who are happy to do that and be named, but fewer and fewer, you know, because people realize that it's too outrageous and inflammatory to say things when people know who they are that are overtly hateful. I mean, some people do use it as, you know, a way to rally the troops on their side. But for the most part, there's less and less. And actually, what I found is that's sort of interesting is that I have become the person that's criticized more than the subjects of my columns now when the system has been switched. And so people will focus more of their vitriol on me and on past things. Like, for example,
We may need to save this example for right after the break. Rekha, we'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Rekha Basu, columnist at the Des Moines Register, Rachel Rubel, lecturer in the Communication Studies Department at Iowa State University, and Autumn Phillips, editor of the Quad City Times. We're talking about online engagement, civility, and the comments sections, and you are welcome to join us. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about online engagement and civility. This conversation spurred by the fact that a number of high-profile news organizations have done away with their comments sections in recent days. NPR and the Quad City Times both made their announcements. And this is something that news organizations, blogs, all kinds of organizations really struggle with online because when people are allowed to post anonymously, sometimes the comments sections can be extremely provocative, sometimes very filled with hate speech and comments that are not related to the content at hand. And a lot of organizations are trying to figure out how to create a space for civic engagement and conversations that actually forward the conversation. I'm talking with Rachel Rubel, lecturer in the Communication Studies program at Iowa State University, Rekha Basu, columnist at the Des Moines Register, and Autumn Phillips, editor of the Quad City Times. We'd also love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about this? Is there a space online that allows you to have an interaction that you feel does forward the conversation? Is there a place that you go to? Do you like to read the comments sections? Do you think this is a negative development? Let us know what you think. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Rekha, right before the break, I interrupted you because you were saying that there's been an interesting shift now that people on the Des Moines Register commenting section are no longer anonymous because they engage with their Facebook profiles, that people have turned from the people who are looking for a personal attack, perhaps have turned from attacking the people you write about to attacking you.
Well, I think that it's about politics for the most part, political disagreements. And so, for example, recently I've been writing a series, today was the last installment of it, about sexual abuse committed by staffers in the Trainer, Iowa School District. And I was wondering what posters would say that was negative about this series. I mean, were they going to stand up for abusers? Were they going to say that I was misquoting people, misunderstanding what was going on? No, what I got that was negative mostly were comments saying, well, where was I when Bill Clinton was sexually harassing women? And you'll never hear the truth out of me because I'm so one-sided and I don't call out, Democrats when they're, really, this column series was not political in any way. It was not about Republicans versus Democrats. But I think that there are just some readers out there who are so upset by my political views and the fact that I get to spew them every week that they look for any opportunity that they can to sort of find some parallelism where I'm being a hypocrite or, where I'm not holding true to my ideals. And so that's kind of what popped up on the trainer piece, which was interesting, but nobody has really criticized the piece itself. You know, some people criticize the fact that I'm a columnist writing a series that's starting off on the front page and that I should confine myself to the opinion page. But that's really about it.
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people in the public realm receive personal attacks. I know I receive personal attacks. Pretty much every journalist I know does. That seems to be something that goes along with the job. How do you feel about that, Rekha?
Absolutely. I completely accept it. You know, initially, I've been doing this at the Register for 25 years. And in the first few years when online postings were allowed, it was a little harrowing. And it definitely shakes you up to be spoken of in, very degrading terms for all the world to see. But then I really had to have some serious conversations with myself and say, what am I doing this for? Is it to get nothing but praise all the time and, to have my name in headlines? Or is it because I really want to change the world with journalism. And there are issues that I want to call attention to about, you know, social injustice and discrimination and so on. And if I'm not willing to, you know, put myself out there in a way that people can come back and criticize me, well, then, I shouldn't have this job. I mean, that's really kind of what it came down to. And also the fact that I get to take my pot shots 3 days a week in my column. And people have a right to respond angrily if they're angry. They have to do it within certain limitations of language and profanity and also prejudice.
Autumn, do you have anything you'd like to add to that? Because you mentioned how morale was boosted almost immediately among your newsroom. I mean, getting that kind of feedback from commenters is difficult. I mean, it's going to come anyway through email and through Facebook messages and comments online, perhaps. But that anonymous comment section really did create an opportunity for those kind of personal attacks to get a little out of hand.
Yeah, it did. And she, you know, she's right. We have the voice. We have the platform. We call people out all day long. For us to be, you know, I think your other reader used the word weak, too weak to get to take it back, to hear responses from the public. Yeah, she's right. That's a problem. But what we, some of the things we were seeing, and I think when I'm talking about the morale boost, was the name calling, there was some cruelty there. There were legitimate things, you know, questioning judgment or questioning the journalism or suggesting things that were left out or biased. But then there's the name calling and there's the weird, you know, body shaming. I don't know why that's, you know, a thing. Or, if your mugshot's there making fun of the way somebody looks, you know, that gets to you.
Right. Rachel, I know that you have to leave in just a moment, but I want to ask you before you go. There have been a lot of conversations online about the fact that, you know, people post their political views and try to engage in conversation, perhaps, with people with differing political views. Is there any evidence that people ever change their minds through the kinds of conversations that people have online? I mean, a lot of those conversations devolve pretty quickly into name calling, but there are times when you see people really engaging and explaining their thoughts to each other. Does that help people think differently? Oh, we may have lost Rachel. Already. All right. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that question, Reka, just as far as seeing people actually move forward with a conversation. Is that something you've witnessed online in comments?
You know, where I see it happen is on my Facebook page, because I post every column on my personal Facebook, page just for readers primarily. I don't know 99% of the people who are my Facebook friends, because I accept generally anybody as a friend. And so I noticed that the commentary on some of those, underneath some of my postings on my Facebook page, is very thought-provoking and interesting, and that there are, a lot of people will weigh in, and it can get quite nuanced, and people can shift positions, and people can question, even people who are generally supporters of my point of view can question me in ways that I think are quite legitimate about a particular point I'm making. And, you know, I think that actually there's a lot of value to that. I think there's a lot of value to that. Another thing I just want to mention about the positive aspect of having commenting is, you know, I was referring to this trainer series on sex abuse that I did. One of the victims really was very badly traumatized, victim of sexual abuse when she was in eighth grade in trainer. And she subsequently left the country this summer. She just couldn't stand being here anymore. She made a lot of changes in her life, Rochelle Miller. And she moved to the Dominican Republic to teach and live for 2 years. She's a teacher. She's in her 30s now. And she wrote me and said she posted the piece after picking it up from my Facebook page. She posted it on her own Facebook page. And she said she has gotten such overwhelming support from people in trainer and all over the place, including in the Dominican Republic, that she feels really supported for having come out publicly with her experiences. So in that sense, I think that, you know, it can play a very beneficial role.
And people who in the past would have had to sit down and write a letter to express support or positive views can now do that instantaneously, just like people who want to make a negative comment. So that kind of access has changed as well. I want to get to the phones. Terry is on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. Just wanted to comment. I lived in Davenport and wrote a lot of letters to the editor, to the paper. And I think where I was most turned off by this online commentary under things I wrote really started there. And since I've moved to Florida now, our local paper, they went from having the comments anonymous now to having them identified. And to my way of thinking, it hasn't made very much difference. So many of the comments are degenerate and uncivil. And I don't think that that identifying the person has helped that much. I just find the stuff on Facebook, it just seems to be a bunch of people who happen to agree, sending each other's likes. And I don't see a lot of real discourse coming in out of any of this. It's just superficiality. And I'm 76 years old, so maybe I'm over the hill and I just can't appreciate the nuances. But I think we so much need to have balanced communication and people who are in different positions able to have a comfortable dialogue. And it's next to impossible to achieve that now.
That's an interesting comment, Tom. And the numbers that I was sharing earlier that NPR.org cited were striking to me because it sort of drove home the fact that so few people, and even on Facebook and on Twitter, so few people are actually engaging in that conversation that it kind of amplifies the voices of just a few people who want to engage in that kind of conversation. Do you feel that way as well, Tom?
Charity?
Yeah.
Let me just say, too, I think, you know, I see so much of this is some kind of an astounding failure of our educational system. We are to a point where repetition is equated with truth.
Interesting.
And how in the world can repetition contribute anything to truth? And yet we have a lot of people in society that operate on that basis. And I just think we need to do a careful probing into our educational system and to see why people are coming out with such a degree of ignorance.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for your comments. And Katie comments on Facebook in response to the earlier point that I brought up about whether people are actually convinced by other people sharing viewpoints. She says, you don't convince the person you're arguing with. You convince the silent spectators. So that's an interesting idea, too, that you're not necessarily just responding to the person that you seem to be responding to, but engaging with people who are not actually actively engaging in the conversation. Andy's on the line next in Davenport. Hi, Andy.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say I agree with your last caller. It's not his age. I'm 30 years old. I truly believe that this is a broader spectrum problem due to the fact that I can call into this radio show and I could tell you my name's Andy. I could tell you I'm from wherever I want to tell you I'm from. And I can say what I want with little to no consequence because, honestly, you have no idea who I really am. So that also goes along with as far as commenting on a post. You can make the profile public. You can do what you want with it. But unless those people really know who you are, I can make my profiles private for that matter, and it really does no good. So without actually being face-to-face with someone and having to face not only what they're going to say to you, the gestures they make, the faces they make, and having that actual interaction with someone, I don't think that you feel the same regret with what you say or post or anything because you don't have to actually look at them.
That's an interesting point, Andy, and I just want to add that throughout an hour on a call-in show, we have the opportunity to curate the comments very actively because we do have a producer who answers the phones and asks people what they're going to be talking about, and people do generally tell the truth. We also, if we receive a comment that is completely off-topic or a provocative comment that is what we might characterize as hate speech, we don't put that on the air. I don't need to read that. So we have an opportunity within the hour to do a lot of curation that can't be done 24 hours a day online. Autumn, now that you have made this choice at the Quad City Times and, again, still engaging with your readers in social media, where do you see this going in the future? What is your hope?
Well, I guess my one thing, you know, your first caller to mentioned writing letters to the editor to us and being discouraged because the comments were so negative or cruel. I've heard from multiple people who said that they've years ago stopped sending in letters to the editor because they were afraid of the immediate backlash they would receive from anonymous commenters. So partly I'm hoping that it brings back, you know, some of the people who fell away, who've been afraid to, quote-unquote, comment in the more traditional ways, that maybe it will bring back a certain robustness to our print and online opinion pages. I think that that's going to happen. I'm looking forward to that. It's made us think carefully about our Facebook presence and how we use it, and our Twitter presence and how we use it. It's going to be an ongoing conversation. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen next, but.
Well, and Reka, I'd love to hear your thoughts because, as you mentioned, the Des Moines Register made the move from anonymous comment sections to using comment sections that are Facebook curated a little bit. People have to register with their Facebook identities, and so there's a little more public kind of comment. Where do you see this going in the future?
Well, so I'm not sure which direction the Register is going to take it in, if it's going to move in the same direction as the Quad City Times and NPR. But what I just wanted to offer another twist on this whole subject, which relates to it. I think that what we're seeing is we have a tendency to blame it on the technology, on the method by which people communicate their coarse point of views. But I think what we're seeing is a general coarsening of public discourse in this country. And so you do have people who will come up to you. I mean, when I lived in South Florida, and I think Iowans tend to be more civil-minded in the ways that they disagree with people or encounter people, I had people coming up to me and spewing hatred in person in South Florida. I also had people calling me up on the telephone after September 11, 2001, saying, you know, that they wished that I died in the Twin Towers because I was a Muslim, which, you know, I'm not, but that's immaterial. So, you know, people will find a way to say hateful things. It's not just the medium that's the issue. I think it's what's out there. It's that there is so much polarization politically going on in this country. And so I guess I think that sometimes we get carried away. You know, you see it at certain political candidates' rallies. I mean, for God's sake, you know, this hatred. So it's not just online postings where it's expressing itself. The only difference, I guess, is if people are able to go unidentified. But that stuff still happens.
Reka Basu, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Reka Basu, columnist at the Des Moines Register. And Autumn Phillips, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Autumn Phillips, editor at the Quad City Times. We were talking today about online engagement and comments sections, online civility, and moving conversations forward. Talk of Iowa is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime. Get in touch. Talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us @IPRTalk. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.